Hey folks, here George Kovach. It's Friday morning. I'm home today, going to work out of the house, working on some talks for a Cape. And more importantly, I'm working on a brisket. And this is my custom-made offset log-burning Texan smoker. I got a 14-pound brisket on there. I heard Scott's post last night on ketamine for airway management, and this was a follow-up to the video post that I had done on the prior week. And I do feel a need to sort of add further commentary, whether this is going to go on MCRIT or somewhere else, I don't know. But I want to begin with thanking Scott for engaging me in this discussion and dialogue. It was heated and healthy, it caused us, I think, both to sort of look at our current practice and question how or if we should change things. I do have to say that I take a little bit of issue with the fact that my post was edited down to 20 minutes because it was felt that the original one at 38 minutes was too long. I did agree to that, and Scott did send me that. I guess I reluctantly agreed, but did. And then Scott's post comes out last night at 36 minutes. So one of my main messages here today is that if you really want to get my full view on this, is please, please, please watch the full version on ketamine for airway management, chainsaws, MacGyver, toolboxes, etc. that's on Scott's site, not the 20-minute one, because it gives, importantly, the context around this this issue. One of the big things that we begin with is really, do we need something else? In other words, in our toolbox, we've had RSI for years and we're doing pretty good at it in terms of getting the tube in the right hole, but do we need something else beyond awake? Awake is relatively infrequently used, and we know that people are using other drugs and forms of sedation, including ketamine. So I think the answer is yes. The question is how that should be employed, and what additional value does it bring to the table? And that was really the point of this discussion. In my view, it's really for the patient that is truly uncooperative. And again, I think that many of my patients I used to write off as being uncooperative that I can make, and I'm not cajoling anybody, I'm not holding their hands, I'm just simply talking to them as part of anything I do. So it's not that hard. And it's something you I think can do. So the truly uncooperative patient who has difficult anatomy, more commonly as Scott says, who has difficult physiology. The next point I want to make is Scott, one of his things was to talk about bandwidth and that he's got a really sick patient, all kinds of things happening, and doesn't have the bandwidth to do a full awake. I guess the issue is that I have those same patients. I do this on critically ill, morbidly obese, septic patients and respiratory failure. And I'm not ignoring, the patient for their airway. Just as anybody does as team leader, you have to decide who does what. And I'm a trauma team leader. Sometimes I'm the best person in the room to manage that patient's airway. So if I'm going to do that, I have to officially offload the team lead responsibility to somebody else to assist in that airway. There's ways to do that, and I don't buy into the fact that you don't have the bandwidth, because nobody has the bandwidth, but hopefully you're working with a team that collectively has the appropriate bandwidth to take care of this patient. The next point as I made is that an awake approach is difficult for sure, as Scott has stressed, way more difficult than doing an RSI, but it doesn't have to be. It's way more difficult most of the time because people don't practice. They don't have the mechanics of doing this on somebody who's sitting up, right, doing laryngoscopy, and don't have the mechanics and experience of using a flexible, intubating endoscope, which is what I do. And this is a little plea, it's not a skill that's beyond emergency medicine. I think it's way more important than floating pacemakers or all kinds of other procedures, and it's affordable and realistic now, and it's changed my practice completely. So that's an important point, but you have to have the mechanics down, and you have to be able to have the right gear and the right drugs to make it realistic. Otherwise, you're setting yourself up for failure. The big difference between Scott's approach and my approach is that my primary approach, is, as Scott has said, is to topicalize the patient, and then I will or won't dissociate them as necessary through the procedure. And the reason why I think that that's the better way to go is because, again, you're gonna be surprised at how many patients you're able to do it without committing to dissociating that patient, and that is often a good thing, because a patient that can open their mouth, and patients in severe respiratory failure and all kinds of things, they're able often to do that. So I prefer to have that, as opposed to committing upfront to Scott's awake, a dissociated awake approach, where you're giving the ketamine upfront. So that's the big difference. The key thing from topicalization point of view is that there's two parts. One's for the laryngoscopy, which is really the ointment on the back of the tongue, and then some spray by atomizer, and then the atomizer essentially is for them to tolerate intubation. I don't buy into the fact that the dissociated patient makes them easy for laryngoscopy. There's no literature comparing, and there is a ton of literature looking at deep sedation with propofol, but patients spontaneously breathing, big dose fentanyl in the operating room, saying intubating conditions by experienced people are poor, less than optimal in more than 50% of cases. And I don't know that there's any evidence that ketamine should provide any better results than that. And that's the studies that need to be done. And the big concern I have with this, if you're using a ketamine approach primarily. Topicalization of the cords. I mean, I've looked at tons of cords because I do most of my cases using flexible intubating scope, endoscope, and the cords are moving. And I don't think, again, Scott, maybe you did refer to some literature, I'm not aware of it, that should affect the cord movement. I have to make a final comment from a pre-hospital perspective. My pre-hospital colleagues, all of this can be done equally well in the pre-hospital setting, providing you have the appropriate gear, the appropriate experience. And it's not where you're doing it, it's who's doing it and what experience you have and what equipment you have available to you. The question that many jurisdictions are looking at is ketamine provide some benefit over what they're doing now, which is midazolam and fentanyl and that kind of thing outside where they don't have access to RSI and that. And I don't know. Hopefully there's some large organizations that are doing this that they're going to publish and inform us in the future. The last thing is a plea, is that you're hearing Scott's opinion, my opinion, some of it's evidence-based, some of it's experience-based. For those of you that are doing this, a plea to publish your results so that can inform us in the future. So that's my response. Brisket, it'll be done in about 8 or 9 hours. Take care. Have a good weekend.